This is PCJ Radio. Media Network Plus, produced and presented by Paulette McQuarrie and Keith Perrell.
Hello and welcome to the first monthly installment of Media Network Plus from PCJ Radio. I'm Keith Perrell in Taiwan.
I'm Paulette McQuarrie in Canada. Over the next 55 minutes, we will talk radio, both old and new, the trends and the people involved.
That's right. A question that we've had over the past 2 weeks is, why do this show? Well, since PCJ started airing Vintage Media Network with Jonathan Marks, a number of you have asked that we do some new shows. Well, to do a weekly program at this time would be a little bit impossible as we don't have enough resources, but we can offer a monthly version of the program.
We should also mention, Keith, that Media Network Plus is an independent production. It is not connected in any way with Radio Netherlands Worldwide and Jonathan Marks. We will, however, use news items from the Media Network blog at Radio Netherlands, so a special thank you goes to blogmaster Andy Sennett.
Coming up in this first edition, we will look at radio station K103, located at the Kanesetake Reserve, south of Montreal in Canada.
We'll also find out how people in the world's most secretive state get information from the outside world. That state is the DPRK, the Democratic People's Republic of Korea, otherwise known as North Korea. That will be in an interview with the founder and director of Open Radio North Korea.
We will also announce the winners of a giveaway of a TV special produced in 2001 for the 60th anniversary of China Radio International. We have this and much, much more, so stay tuned.
But first, let's begin with a look at some of the headlines from the world of media. On October 12th, Journaliste en Danger welcomed the return of Radio France International on FM in the Democratic Republic of Congo. RFI's signal was shut down nationwide on orders of the Congolese government on July 26, 2009. The government accused RFI of initiating a campaign to demoralize the armed forces of the DRC. In June, a delegation from RFI announced in Kinshasa the opening of a local office with the appointment of an expatriate journalist and the finalization of discussions with the Congolese government regarding the restoration of RFI's signal. According to AFP, Agence France-Presse, the Congolese authorities have made no formal announcement concerning the restoration of the signal.
In April, the UK media regulatory Ofcom invited preliminary expression of interest relating to the operation of short-term digital radio services in London during and around the period of the 2012 Olympic Games and Paralympic Games. In total, it received 10 responses. Although a number of these did not relate to providing short-term services on digital broadcasting platform as requested in the invitation, Ofcom has carefully considered this issue. In consultation with government and taking into account the expressions of interest which were submitted, the limited number of responses means Ofcom has not been able to gauge fully how attractive a proposition this will likely be to commercial operators and by benefits to consumers and citizens that may be realized. The lack of compelling evidence of demand compelled with the not insignificant process involved in licensing any such services has led Ofcom to decide not to proceed with the possible licensing of digital radio services for the period during and around the London 2012 Olympic Games.
Satellite broadcast firms in Egypt said the telecoms regulator has stopped them from offering live feeds to private TV channels, a move that government critics see as a crackdown on independent media before a November election. State media officials said the decision to cancel the feed permits was part of a broader attempt to better regulate independent media and was not a curb on free speech. Critics said this was bound to hamper reporting in the run-up to the November parliamentary vote and a 2011 presidential election. Independent publisher Hisham Kassem says, imposing these regulations, now ahead of parliament and presidential elections, strongly indicates the state's intention to prevent any broadcasting of political dissent or violations against voters. Channels with canceled permits must now broadcast directly via studios affiliated with the state-run media production city. Nader Gohar, owner of satellite feed provider Cairo News Company, has had to cancel bookings by Al Jazeera for 2 units for parliamentary election coverage. "If I go ahead with the booking, I could be jailed," he said. "This will definitely shrink the content and coverage of the parliamentary elections." Before 2004, Egypt's TV and press were limited to government-controlled programs. Since then, privately owned press and media have sprung up, stimulating more criticism of state policy. Osama El-Sheikh, director of Egypt's State Radio and TV Union, denied the latest changes would chill reportage. Sheikh told Reuters, "These are measures to regulate the plethora of companies that set up SNG, or satellite news gathering units, to offer live broadcast feeds to channels. Many of these companies have neither permits nor licenses." He said any channel wishing to rent SNG units for live broadcast could do so through state television.
North Korea again threatened to strike South Korean propaganda sites if Seoul carries out an operation to make anti-Pyongyang broadcast and send leaflets across their heavily armed border. The threat came after the South Korean Defense Minister Kim Tae-yong told lawmakers on October 5th that his government is considering a plan to disseminate radios in the north so its residents can receive anti-Pyongyang broadcasts sent from the south.
Radio is playing an important role in educating people in Asia about protecting the environment, the ABU program committee heard today. Participants in the committee's annual meeting in Tokyo expressed their support for ongoing projects such as Radio Republic Indonesia's Green Radio and the Lights Out project initiated by TBS of Japan. RRI's outgoing president-director Parni Hadi said the Green Radio campaign included tree planting programs in 62 places in Indonesia where there was a local RRI station. Jun Ogawa of TBS praised RRI planting not only trees but ideas in people's minds, especially young people, on protecting the environment. He said TBS had reported on RRI's campaign, giving Japanese an understanding of how Indonesia was tackling environmental issues. In this way, radio had the power to help solve global issues, he said.
And finally, the Finnish broadcasting company YLE has sacked Kimmo Wilska, a newsreader who pretended to be drunk from a bottle of beer during a bulletin that featured a report on alcohol licensing inspections. Mr. Wilska has worked on and off for YLE's English language service on an occasional basis. The managing editor in charge of the English language service said the public broadcaster did not tolerate this kind of behavior seen in the news bulletin.
And that's a look at some of the headlines. If you want more information on these and other stories, we invite you to check out the Media Network blog from Radio Netherlands. You can find them at http://blogs.rnw.nl/media network. Again, that's http://blogs.rnw.nl/media network.
Or you can visit our own website, www.pcjmedia.com, and click on the link for the Media Network blog. You know, Paulette, the last story that we did about Finland, you know, it makes me think of a song. Are you familiar with Monty Python's Flying Circus?
Finland, 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 the country where I want to be, pony trekking or camping, or just watching TV. Finland, 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 it's the country for me. You're so near to Russia, so far from Japan, quite a long way from Cairo. Lots of.
That was Michael Palin with Finland, a song that was featured in Monty Python many, many years ago. You know, Paulette, I'm wondering if YLE, the Finnish broadcasting company, will ever play that song.
I wonder.
Yes, exactly. Anyway, now time for a little bit of a march.
As we heard a few moments ago, North Korea has threatened to strike South Korea if anti-Pyongyang websites and radio stations in the South plan to continue their anti-North position. This is nothing new, and over the years there have been a number of broadcasts targeted to the North, stations like Voice of the People. Voice of Free People.
북녘동포 여러분 안녕하십니까? 대한민국 서울에서 보내드리는 자유의 설이 북조선 선교 방송입니다.
And North Korea Reform Radio.
조선인민 여러분 안녕하십니까? 인민의 안녕과 나라의 발전을 위한 조선개혁 방송입니다. 조선개혁 방송은 독재적 지도자 한 사람이 아닌
There is also one station broadcast from Japan for the Japanese that have been abducted by the North called Radio Shinkaze.
This is Shinkaze, Sea Breeze from Tokyo, Japan. This is a radio program broadcast by the Japanese private organization Komujan. With the support from many people.
Listening to foreign radio in North Korea is very risky. Most of the radios in the DPRK are pre-tuned to government stations, and in larger cities like Pyongyang, all home radios are connected by cable. So your choice is rather limited. You can only listen to broadcasts from the state broadcaster. With the internet being heavily regulated and access to websites controlled, how do citizens in the DPRK get information from outside the country or news and information from their own country? Well, the answer is simple: shortwave radio.
Under North Korean law, however, owning a shortwave radio is illegal, and you can be sentenced to death for the possession of a set or sent to one of the country's labor camps. This, however, has not stopped thousands of North Koreans from buying shortwave radio sets smuggled from China and sold on the black market. A shortwave radio on the black market could go for as high as $200 American in some cases. That is 10 times the amount of the average salary in the North. The North has tried repeatedly to jam these broadcasts. However, the regime's resources, such as oil to produce electricity, are limited, so the jamming is not very effective.
One of these stations is Open Radio North Korea. The station signed on in 2005 and says it's an alternative to the anti-Pyongyang stations. Ha Taek-young is the founder of the station and tells us their main purpose and how information is sent to and from North Korea.
자유의 광장, 화해의 전당, 희망의 소리, 열린 북한 방송입니다. 열린 북한 방송은 남북 해외의 한민족이 함께 만들어가는 참여 방송, 공동체 방송입니다. 북한의 형제들과 대화하고 싶은 사람은 누구나 참여하실 수 있습니다.
Yeah, I founded this organization in 2005.
And you began it in 2005. And what was the main purpose for it? Because there are some other international broadcasters that do, for example, like the Voice of America, that their signal does reach North Korea. Is the objective, of course, to offer a different perspective on North Korea?
Yeah, the main purpose of my organization is to promote information flow in and out of North Korea. So for the information in process, we broadcast radio programs toward North Korean people. And for the information out of North Korea, we have a network, personal network inside North Korea, who report what's happening inside North Korea to the outside world. So that's why we are running the webpage in Korean, both in Korean and in English, to report the internal North Korean news.
That must be very challenging. I mean, how do you get information outside North Korea? I mean, it's the most secretive country in the world.
It's quite secret compared to other countries in the world. But actually, since about 10 years ago, the control of the regime over North Korean people get weakened. So especially in the border area, the Chinese North Korean border area, more and more people are using Chinese cell phones because the signals of Chinese cell phones can reach the border area of North Korea either because the border doesn't know the barrier of the electric signal. In my office, we call the people in North Korea where they live in the border, Chinese mm-hmm. border. That's one way we contact them. And the other way is we meet them in China as they come out of North Korea, pretty high-ranking personnel. that's the other way. I would contact North Korean people and get information from them.
It must be a very difficult job because you're contacting people that are coming from a place that is very repressive. I mean, do you have a fear in the back of your head that sometimes that the people that are passing along information, their lives or their families could be at risk?
Exactly, yes. It's a very risky process. So we are very, very careful about, you know, when and how contact them. We don't freely call them, you know. We set times of when, what time we talk to each other, and then North Koreans give us signals, then we call them. And North Koreans, when they call us, they try to find a pretty safe place where they make a call.
Mm-hmm.
Then the time of and talking to each other is not long, you know, less than a few minutes. And then look around and we try to make a call. So it's pretty secret and careful.
Now, with your programs that you're putting together, I mean, it has been done in the past when, let's say, during the Cold War period, either targeted towards the Soviet Union or even at China at one point. Broadcasters that, let's say, wanted to reach the audience, what they would do is they would hire, let's say, either Soviets or Chinese that had left those countries and try to make the program sound as if they were coming from within the country itself. Do you do that as well? I mean, my question is, do you have North Koreans on staff, and do you try to make the program sound as if people may think that they're coming from the central broadcasting system?
You know, we say them, we broadcast from Seoul, Korea. We don't pretend to broadcast within North Korea. We don't do that. It is not fact. We don't make a propaganda type program. We don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
That's journalistic programs.
The announcers that you have on air, are they North Koreans themselves?
We have some of my full-time staffers are North Korean people who defected to South Korea. Yeah, so they have North Korean accent.
Now, with the programs that you're doing, how are you reaching North Korea? Are you using medium wave? Are you using FM, or are you using shortwave?
Yeah, we have two shortwave hours program, and we have 1 hour AM and the other 1 hour FM.
Mm-hmm.
All 4 hours a day.
Now, with those programs that you're doing, it must happen quite often that the North Koreans try to jam either the shortwave or AM signals, yes?
They tend to jam in the early period of our broadcast, in 2005 and 2006. But nowadays, they don't jam at all. I think the reason is because of the shortage of the electricity. As you know, North Korea suffers from energy issues. So at night, you know, only the Kim Il-sung statue is shining. The other area is pretty dark. So they suffer from a very serious shortage of electricity. I think it influenced on jamming as well. So jamming costs a lot of energy.
They're probably just not bothering anymore, is what you're saying.
Yeah, especially to us, because there are several radio programs to North Korea. My program is not, as I said, is not very propagandistic type. So some type of radio programs are jammed in North Korean region, but not us.
With the program that you're doing, the information, of course, you're getting to North Korea because there is a lack of information there. I mean, there's no internet. Most radios are pre-tuned to government stations. But can people, let's say, in North Korea buy, say, radios from Japan or from China on the black market that can tune on many different parts of the shortwave dial and the FM dial and the AM dial?
Yes, they can buy it in the black market. Most radios they buy in black market are imported from China. So if they are willing to acquire a radio, so yeah, they can do that.
When you're putting the programs together, I mean, we just heard recently that Kim himself was visiting China. They seem to be very unpredictable with their actions at many times. Do you think because you have North Koreans on staff and because you have contacts, have you been able, has your radio station itself been able to predict events and outcomes of events with North Korea?
Because we have some contacts and the very pretty high-ranking people of North Korea, the information we get from them sometimes can let us predict what's going to happen next time. For example, in the case of the visit of Kim Jong-il to China a few months ago, our informants said that he's going to visit some city in China tomorrow. So we reported it. It was correct. And then some policy issues as well. For example, this power. Now in North Korea, the power succession is taking place from Kim Jong-il to his third son. It was our program who reported it first in Korea, South Korea. And then the policy to South Korea as well, you know. For example, in the spring season of this year, they said that North Korea is going to provoke some way or another South Korea in military means. So it turned out to be true through the ship sinking accident, which happened in April. So, yes, it's quite correct. It enabled us to predict pretty accurately what's going to happen next time.
One final question. What about the funding for Open Radio North Korea? Is it mostly done from private donations?
It is mostly from abroad, not within South Korea. United States, Europe, and Japan, private foundation. For example, in the United States, National Endowment for Democracy. In Europe, Reporters Without Borders, and some fund. About 80% of funds come from outside. About 20% of our fund, come within South Korea.
I was speaking there with Ha Tuck Young, the founder of Open Radio North Korea. As you know, one of the big news stories around the world was the award of the 2010 Nobel Peace Prize to Liu Xiaobo, the Chinese dissident who's in a prison in China for the next 11 years. Since this story came out, as you know, China has been hitting very, very hard. And over the weekend, I realized something, and I was very surprised. Now, I'm a regular listener to the Voice of America. The VOA is one of the first things I listen to when I wake up in the morning at 100 hours UTC. And they have a booming signal into this part of the world. Now, to illustrate what I'm trying to make a point of here, let's listen to how they normally sound.
At the granting of the Nobel Peace Prize to jailed dissident Liu Xiaobo. We get more from Stephanie Ho.
Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesman Ma Jiaoxu criticized the Nobel Committee for awarding this year's Peace Prize to Liu Xiaobo.
That was the Voice of America on 7575 kilohertz at just after 12 hours UTC on October the 12th. Now, they have a number of frequencies for Asia and the Pacific. Some of them are targeted towards this part of Asia. And I got a call from a friend of mine on Skype saying that he was listening to the VOA in Shanghai. And this is what
he heard. And this, by the way, is the same broadcast, but on a different frequency. This frequency is 9760 kilohertz.
As president of the proposed talks with North Korea over suspended cross-border tour program, Seoul Heath Kyushin has said it needs more time to decide on details of the talks, which were set to begin on Friday, as suggested by Pyongyang.
Now, that's how the same broadcast sounded in China, but on a different frequency. The frequency, again, was 9760 kilohertz. And yes, there was something right on top of it. Yes, it was the English language section of China Radio International on the same frequency, reading their news and admitting the story about Liu Xiaobo. So I then asked him to tune to another VOA frequency that is also directed to this part of Asia, and that is of 12075. And this is what he heard. And that was the VOA as it was recorded in Shanghai on Tuesday, October the 12th, at just after 12 hours UTC on 12075 kilohertz. You can hear them faintly in the background. On top of that, you can hear China National Radio. As I said before, it is very unusual for the Chinese to jam English broadcasts, but considering how sensitive this Nobel Peace Prize around Liu Xiaobo is, it's not really surprising. In fact, I got an email just before recording this piece from a friend of mine in Beijing, and he said the cable companies sent a notice to their subscribers that said, for the next 2 weeks, due to a satellite problem, CNN International, BBC World, Fox News, and Star TV will not be available. Amazing how it happens just around this time.
Media Network Plus.
Check out PCJ online at www.pcjmedia.com. Now, time to announce the winners of the 60th anniversary China Radio International TV special from 2001.
中国国际广播电台
China Radio International.
The two lucky winners of the CRI 60th anniversary TV special are James Bernhardt in Minnesota, USA.
And Dennis Tambora Sambria in Honduras. Both prizes are now in the post, so do let us know when you receive them.
Also, if you would like to enter the draw for next month's edition of the show, check us out online at www.pcjmedia.com.
And if you would like to receive the special Media Network Plus QSL card, drop us a note. I'll give out the address later on in the show.
In the past few months, CKRK-FM, otherwise known as K103 on the Kahnawake community south of Montreal in Canada, has been the talk of the city. Before we get to that, we need to have a look at the station's history. K103 signed on March 30, 1981, with 50 watts.
The station was the brainchild of Conway Jocks. Joe Delarone, the board of directors at K103, explains.
Well, there was a master plan, so to speak. Our local cultural center actually wanted to put a television station together back in about 1979, 1980. And they actually did that but they found it was very expensive and very difficult at the time to do that. They wanted to do a low-power television station. Very, very difficult and expensive. So somebody, and I imagine it was Conway, said, well, we should probably do radio. That's something more doable. And Mr. Jocks, applied for a license through the CRTC for a community native radio station. I remember seeing in the files some of the letters of support. He went and got letters of support from everybody, and he did a lot of legwork. He also talked to some of the commercial stations in Montreal and found people who would help put a station together, and one of the stations, CJAD, as a matter of fact, donated a lot of their surplus equipment to K103, or back then KRK, mm-hmm. to help us get on the air. So it was a lot of work, but it was done in a fairly quick amount of time when I look back, because there was an awful lot to do, but Conway Jocks was a very energetic and directed man, I guess, and he got it done.
So from the period where he got the idea to when the station went on air...
Well, there's no doubt that it took less than 2 years, and I think it's probably closer to 1 year in terms of really getting it rolling. Because from the idea to the actual turning on the transmitter on March 30th, 1981, well, I would say probably 18 months would be a fair estimate from gestation of idea to actual on air. About 18 months, I think, would be fairly accurate.
Now, when the station began, what sort of programming did you have back then?
On the first day, because I was there on the first day, I was one of the four people on the air, as a matter of fact. The first day was 10 o'clock in the morning. We had just a general kind of mixed bag of music with an announcer, Jim Hum, who was, he was a pretty good announcer, and he got the ball rolling. And then we had a talk show, which has been the flagship of the station from day one and is still on the air today. It still has the same theme music that was chosen by Conway, and we still run it every day at noon, Monday to Friday, the Party Line Talk Show. That was on the first day, and then we were off the air, and then we went back on at 6 o'clock with some country and western for a couple of hours, which I was honored to be the host for that. And then we had another show from 8 until 10 at night, and then we closed down. So it was a very, we didn't have 24-hour day broadcasting back in the early days, but, you know, we did what we could, and as time went on, it expanded to the point where now it is 24 hours a day.
Welcome. You are listening to 103.7 FM, CKRK, K103, Kahnawake.
When we went first one on the air, we were 50 watts. Not very much. It basically covered Kahnawake and maybe a little leakage across the river into some of the areas of the neighboring town. But about 1993 or 94, you'll have to pardon, I don't know exactly which year. I was there, but I don't remember what year it was. But around the mid-90s, early to mid-90s, we applied for a power increase to 250 watts. Which is not as much as it sounds. It's not five times the amount. It's basically half again the power, but it did allow us to reach into many areas of downtown Montreal, certainly the West Island, as they call it over here. Our neighboring communities were certainly more able to catch the station.
I'm free! I'm free! I'm libre!
The all-important question is, what do you want to do first?
What about Disneyland?
No, Disneyland. I go to my nearest K103 radio bingo distributor for a K103 bingo package.
What about your wife?
Only if she gets my dabber so I can win $3,000 on a Game 10 jackpot.
So, what you're saying is you're going to play this Friday's radio bingo on K103 for a chance at $3,000 in the full card?
Oh, yay, si, senor.
Well, there you have it. K103's Radio Bingo is
the hottest game in town.
And now, K103 Monster Weather.
Tomorrow you go on to pack your umbrella because there's a 40% chance of showers in the afternoon with a high of 10. More rain on the way for Wednesday with a high of 11. It's going to continue to stay wet on Thursday with a high of 10. Right now it is 8 degrees Celsius in downtown Kahnawake with music from Keisha Cole.
Now, when your radio station, let's say, has funding drives either to raise money to buy a fire truck for the community or whatever, do you also get, let's say, non-natives that also will make pledges and to donate money?
Certainly on occasion, depending on the cause. You know, when we do things, it's kind of, Ganawag is a do-it-yourself community, though. It really believes that God helps those who help themselves, so we go all out and support ourselves. But certainly there are a lot of people out there who are big fans of the station, and they do give. They certainly do. And one of the things we do all the time, our main source of fundraising for ourselves is Radio Bingo. And I'd say the majority of players are actually from outside the community. Mm-hmm. So, in effect, they support the station even more than our own people, just in terms of numbers, because there are only 8,000 of us, and there are 3 million or so of them out there. So that's one thing that's worked very well for us.
On July 11, 1990, the station played an important role, not just for the community of 8,000 at Kahnawake, but also for Montreal. This date is known in Canadian history as the 1990 Oka Crisis. On that date, the crisis developed as the local government in Oka, north of Montreal, wanted to expand a golf course on Mohawk land. After months of rising tension between the Oka City Hall and Mayor Jean Ouellet and the Mohawk community, the Quebec Police Force went in to remove the barricades. This is what started the confrontation that lasted nearly 3 months. This is how it played out on CBC Radio.
The support for this particular roadblock at Oka, what is happening there?
You can hear firing. I'm not sure if it's weapons or if it's... yes, it is. They're firing at us. I can see... I'm trying to get behind a tree, actually, and the tear gas is starting to come. But as you can hear, there's semi-automatic weapon fire.
Now, is this police firing or Mohawk firing?
It appears to be. I can't tell for sure where it's coming from, but it appears to be coming from the police lines, yes. They're not firing at people, but they're firing on the ground. I'm going to move back because the tear gas is getting to me. Sorry.
Laurent, are you able to continue?
Not right now. Sorry.
Okay, Laurent, take good care of yourself now.
Thank you.
CBC Radio from July 11th, 1990. To show solidarity for the Kanasitaki community, the Mohawk Nation at Kahnawake blocked the Mercier Bridge between the island of Montreal and South Shore suburbs. K103 kept the community informed, as well as those outside the community, as to what was going on. Here's Joe Delarone to explain the important role of the station and the challenges the station faces today.
It was a huge role. Because we were able to, we stayed on the air and gave out information and let, I think there were two things that were very important that we need to remember. One was that we kept the morale up of our own community by letting everybody know exactly what was going on in terms of, you know, when supplies of food were now available or if there was gasoline that was available or things like that. So just getting basic information to people so that we could survive and live was extremely useful. And people were able to get to speak about the issue and get things off their chest, but just as important was the fact that people outside the territory would hear our point of view. And we can't emphasize that enough, the Ganawake point of view in terms of how we felt about how things were going and the struggles that we were having and why we did what we did and all of that. And to hear, to allow us our point of view was just as important, if not more important, than the first part of what we did.
What are some of the challenges today? Because back then, like most media, I mean, there was at one point where, you know, people had, say, three TV channels. Now there's 300 channels. There was maybe a point where there was, say, 15 radio stations, but now with the advent of new technology and it was like satellite and internet, you can have access to thousands of radio stations. Your community, of course, is no different. There's a lot more media out there than there was. Is this a big challenge for you?
Not only is it a challenge to stay relevant, but it's a challenge to stay solvent I'll be honest, because even in Ganawaga, there's an expansion of media. We have two independent television stations now here. We have a community newspaper. We have an online newspaper. We have an internet radio station. And, you know, the dollars get spread out. And, you know, so the challenge of maintaining financial stability is a challenge. There's no doubt about that. And, you know, so, but the other part is remaining relevant is you have to, or else you will fade away. Because if you don't do something that makes you important to the community, they're going to go to a station that, if you like rock music, you'll find a station that plays it 24 hours a day. If you're a news junkie, you'll find CNN or somebody on the radio 24 hours a day. If you're a country music fan, you know, the list goes on and on.
Recently, the station has been getting some negative comments in the press as well as on the internet due to the fact that K103 has hired a number of non-native broadcasters that were fired or laid off from large commercial stations across the St. Lawrence Seaway in Montreal. Names like Ted Bird, who for many years worked at Shome FM. The criticism has come from those within the community and from those outside the community who have been questioning K103. How can a station licensed with the CRTC, that's the Canadian Radio and Television Commission, afford to hire big-name broadcasters for a station meant to be a Mohawk community station?
I think we maybe took a bit of a chance, but because of the of who the personality was, I mean, we have one guy, Ted Bird, who was part of the number one morning show in Montreal. And when his original partner, moved off to Calgary, and then he was not happy where he was, we welcomed him over here. And I think people in Ganawaga were very proud of the fact that he thought highly enough of us to come here,
mm-hmm.
that he did. And so for the vast majority of people, they've been pretty proud of it. There are always going to be detractors. But I find that when I look at who the detractors are, it's not usually people who've actually helped to do anything or, you know, it's just people who will just complain. And there always will be people who do that, and that's their right. But the vast majority have been extremely supportive, and certainly Mr. Bird has brought new fans to the station and a higher profile, and it's helped.
See, the reason why I mentioned this, because I was, when I was looking around, I came across some stuff on the internet from a Yahoo group called Radio Montreal that's run by Mr. Sheldon Harvey. And I was reading some of the posts that were going on there because Mr. Harvey had been employed at the radio station and then was let go. And there seems to be this, I wouldn't even know how to describe it, but sort of like an almost drama playing out between him and some others and the radio station itself. Some criticism has come, let's say, from some people saying, well, you know, two other CJD personalities, which is the station, which is the AM station that Ted Bird used to belong to, Shome, by the way, which is the FM station, Laura and Olga, they said, you know, these guys came into the community, they're doing a show, and, you know, what do they know about the community? What do you say, let's say, to the, you know, Mr. Sheldon Harvey and to his other supporters out there?
Well, there will always be people who are not happy. Unfortunately, Mr. Harvey was working at the station, and when, you know, it didn't end happily, unfortunately, and that's all I really want to say about that. And maybe there's some bitterness because of that. I don't doubt that he was very loyal and loved the fact of what the station does.
Sheldon Harvey was hired on a 6-month contract as an administrative consultant to help the station with their financial problems. A veteran broadcaster of over 20 years, Harvey has become one of the more outspoken critics of what has recently been happening at K103.
At the end of the 6-month contract, they were supposed to sit down with me and review, you know, what they wanted to do next. And up until then, I'd heard nothing but good things. The board members, it's a 7-person board, and everybody seemed to be very happy with the results. And it had come, and I was asking them, I said, you know, look, the contract's coming up. What's going to happen? I need to know, you know, what's going on and you know, where we go from here. And yeah, it was okay, fine. You know, we're going to talk about this. Don't worry about it. And what came up was a major fundraising event in the community to raise money to purchase a new fire truck for their fire department, which they sadly needed to replace an old vehicle that they had. We went ahead. We had this successful radiothon. And then, I don't know, a couple of the guys on the board, there seemed to be some, they were kind of a little distant. You know, I'd bring up the subject of, you know, okay, where do we go from here? And they were kind of like putting it off. And, you know, I didn't really know what was happening. I never really got to the bottom of it. I never was given an exit interview. I was never given an opportunity to sit down and meet these guys face to face afterwards to discuss what took place. It was just very strange the way everything ended.
Now, when this happened and you left, because it seems that the K103 saga, the station has now gone in a completely other direction. Now, we shouldn't mention, once again, because people may not know this, especially if they're listening overseas, but Ganawagi is actually just south of Montreal. And the southwest of Montreal. And there were a lot of changes on the Montreal radio scene where one of the local commercial stations let go a lot of their staff. And some of them have been popping up on K103.
The new team that came in, the new management, they suddenly decided that they were going to do things their own way and they were going to make changes. And one of these changes was, they suddenly seemed to get themselves into financial difficulty and were starting to look for ways to try to get out of this. And somebody came up with the bright idea that, well, we can go hire these unemployed former big-time radio stars in commercial Montreal radio and put them on our radio station. And some of those people that were no longer there were young native broadcasters who came to that station while I was there. And, you know, we didn't have a lot of money to work with. We you know, the salaries were pretty meager, tried to give people the best we could with what we had to work with. All of a sudden, you know, these people are coming in who had, you know, huge contracts at Montreal radio stations, but, you know, for whatever reasons, they were no longer there and they were unemployed, and somehow they ended up at K103. And lots of people were asking lots of questions. Well, you know, why are these people on the air and the native people are not? And why is some of the programming that we had before no longer there and new programs are being put on? These people are sort of in the spotlight, and you're saying you don't have any money. Well, how are you coming up with money to pay these people? We, I started there in March and I was gone in November of 2008. In that time period, we brought on so many new people. There was a buzz at the radio station, and suddenly that turned around and we made the place interesting. We made the place appealing to people. We had people coming, volunteering to come and do stuff at the station for free because K103 was sort of the place you wanted to be.
A question that many people inside and outside the community have been asking is, if the station is licensed with the CRTC and has a clear mandate, why is no one in the organization and the community questioning the board members of K103?
It's the nature of the native community in Canada, where there are certain things that happen with K103 radio and happen with other native radio stations in Canada where the CRTC doesn't sort of, you know, doesn't patrol them or police them as diligently as they go after commercial radio stations. They have a sort of a different status with their stations, and they allow them to sort of freewheel a little bit more and do what they want. They don't have to really abide by, you know, Canadian content. Put it this way, the native community, the Mohawk community, do not consider themselves to be Canadian.
Mm-hmm.
They claim their territory, the territory of Ganawagi, as sovereign territory. Yet they have a CRTC license, so that's a little contradictory in itself. But as far as the CRTC coming in and saying, hey, you know, proof of performance and all this, you're not doing what you're supposed to do, I don't think that's ever happened in their 30-year history, and I don't think it will happen. But it's up to the community members, and that's what we've been working on, and a number of people in the community, and I've been helping out with this, to try to get the community members who aren't happy with what's going on at K103 to stand up and say something. You know, the board is an elected board, so there's board elections coming up shortly, and we've been trying to encourage new people to run for the board of directors and to get in there and unseat the people who are currently there, who are taking the station in the direction that they are right now. Now, whether that's going to happen or not, hard to say. You know, it takes a lot of time and effort, and I think, as I said earlier, a lot of people have just got frustrated and they've kind of said, enough. It's not like K103 is the only radio station that these people can listen to. You know, they live, you know, 20 minutes outside of Montreal, and they can hear every major Montreal broadcaster without any problem. I think what the current management and board is trying to do is keep this whole issue very low profile. They're going to try and fight their way through this and try to come out at the, you know, the other end of the tunnel. But, you know, there are all kinds of rumors going around right now that, you know, board members are having to dip into their own pockets to pay these people, that the revenue stream is dropping at the radio station. There's been rumors of, you know, them being on the verge of even closing down the station. And a lot of finger-pointing is going on. I've been very vocal, very visual, visible on the net and, you know, talking to people about this. And as a result of that, I've had all kinds of comments made publicly in the local newspaper over there, in letters to the editor, in reports on the radio station itself, bad-mouthing me, criticizing me, insulting me. I mean, I've just, you know, it's been coming at me from all sides. All I can say is that in the 8 months that I was there, we never missed a payroll. We were not losing money. We didn't. There were two people who left that radio station in the 8 months that I was there. There have been 17 or 18 people leave since I left.
If you wish to read more about this story and check out Sheldon Harvey's weblog, just do a search in Google for Radio in Montreal Yahoo Group. Once again, Radio in Montreal Yahoo Group.
Well, we've come to the end of the first edition of Media Network Plus. If you wish to contact us with your comments and suggestions, please feel free to send us an email to pcjmedia@gmail.com. That's pcjmedia@gmail.com.
And if you'd like to write us by snail mail or receive the Media Network Plus QSL card, just let us know what station you heard this show on. The address is PCJ Radio. Attention, Media Network Plus, 8th floor, number 47, Lane 31, Section 1, Sanmin Road, Banqiao, Taipei, ROC 22070. Now, I know I said that a little bit fast, so I will say it again a little bit slower. PCJ Radio. Attention, Media Network Plus. 8th floor, that's 8th floor, number 47, number 47, Lane 31, L-A-N-E 31, Lane 31, Section 1, S-E-C-T-I-O-N 1, Section 1, Sanmin Road, and Sanmin is spelled S-A-N like Norman, M like Mother, I like Ivan, N like Norman Road, Sanmin Road, Banqiao, B-A-N-C-I-A-O, Taipei, Taiwan, ROC 22070. I think I just ran out of breath from reading that. Also, if you wish to hear this program again, do go to our website, www.pcjmedia.com, and you'll find the download on the homepage.
So, for me, it's Paulette McQuarrie in Vancouver, Canada.
And I'm Keith Powell in Taipei, Taiwan. We'll be back next month for another edition of Media Network Plus.
Bye for now.
And best 73s to you all.
This has been a production of PCJ Radio.